Rokan Show. Right here, 720 WGN. Blackhawks hockey coming your way at the top of the hour. As Kevin has been saying all day, this is a must-win circumstance for the Blackhawks. Every game now is a must-win game. There are no two ways around this. That's it, beginning, middle, and end. You say that's correct?
I would say that's correct, for
that's
sure.
That's correct.
Got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. So this will be fun. And they're back in town now in March. They're going to be home for 11 games.
Yeah, 11 of the next 15 on home ice. That's after just playing three games at the United Center in February. So, you know, and the home ice advantage, I don't really know how much of it comes into play this season. They're 500 at home this year. They actually have a better road record. But you got to figure, when it's a stretch this long, they're going to benefit from it.
Yes, one would hope. They're going to need it. They need to win everything. They can, according to my mathematical brain, they can lose only one more game. They got to get a point at least in every game, if not two. That's it. Thank you. Good night and good luck. All right, I want to introduce you to somebody. This is a very interesting story. Dr. George Valdez, he is the author of Narco Mindset. And what Dr. Valdez, who's now a PhD, went to Wheaton College. We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to the redemption part of the story. But that comes later, George. I want to start with how you grew up and how you got involved in the Medellin cartel, Pablo Escobar, right? I mean, this is the narcos world that you found yourself in and found yourself a part of. So let's start at the very, very, very beginning. How old were you when you got introduced to him? Where were you? How did it start?
Okay, at the age, good to be with you, Ro. At the age of 17, I was the youngest employee for the Federal Reserve Bank. And I went to University of Miami full-time and studied and worked full-time at the bank. At the age of 20, when I was graduating, my accounting professor asked me to come work for him and do his Spanish flag. He did not speak Spanish. So I agreed, and it was a chance for me to start my own office and have secretary, everything that I could, having been poor since the day I left Cuba at the age of 10. And the first client that I went to do was a little grocery store. It turns out that it was a front for a group that became known as the Medellin Drug Cartel. See, when you see narcos and you see all these stories about Pablo Escobar, all these people came 6 years after us. We were part of the original group that ended up becoming called the Medellin Cartel.
Okay, and where were you? Were you based in the United States? Were you one of the guys in the U.S.?
Yeah, I was living in Miami, and that was the whole premise of why they approached me, wanting me to handle all operations when I was 21 years old. I was living in Miami. I was clean cut. I've never done drugs in my life. I've never done anything. I didn't have a speeding ticket. Colombians, they were bright in Miami, so they're like, listen, we need you to handle all operations in the United States. And I go more in detail in my book, Coming Clean, but finally, what I did is I made him an offer wanting to just get rid of him. Leave me alone. I mean, I'm happy opening foreign bank accounts. There's no money laundering laws. So I said, okay, guys, you want me to be part of the group? I get 20%. There were four guys. And you got to put up with the money for me because I ain't got a dollar. And I just thought they're going to look at this 20-year-old kid with braces that looked like a nerd and say, hey, kick my butt from Colombia all the way to the U.S. And lo and behold, they come and they say yes. And all of a sudden, I'm like, bro, I'm like, what the hell did I do? I mean, I don't even know what the freak cocaine looks like. I mean, where do I get it? Where do I take it? Who the hell do I sell it to? You know, how do I do it with the money? But, you know, 6 months later, I was in charge of all U.S. operations and bringing in 85% of all the cocaine that came into America. And we're doing about $50 to $100 million a month in 1977.
So when you took over this part, I mean, you were in charge of finding the drug distributors, and then those guys would find the drug dealers on the street. I mean, how, if you weren't actually a part of this world, how did you make connections?
Because what ended up happening, remember, this time there was no, we were not even on the DEA radar, because cocaine was something that was for the rich and famous. Cocaine was for the Hollywood celebrities. And part of a company that I was involved with, this group that I was handling for him, was rebuilding this ship in California. And the guy kept harassing me and like, George, I know that's a cocaine. That boat's for cocaine. I'm like, Mel, no, it's not. No, it's not. Well, lo and behold, little did I know that's how naive I was. So all of a sudden, when they tell me that I'm in charge of all operations, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a deal with these guys in California. And I'm going to give them a stupid price. They're going to say, are you out of your mind? I'm coming back to Columbus and say, guys, I tried, but I don't have a client. Well, lo and behold, they say yes. And before you know it, we're selling, you know, actually, when I introduced cocaine into California, they were using it to mix with heroin. They didn't even know what cocaine was. Man. But our customers were Sammy, I mean, that's your name, no name, but, you know, the Hollywood celebrity, the very famous names that we know. Nobody in the cartel used drugs at this time.
Okay, George, hold on one second. We're talking to George Valdez, who has got an amazing story. He was a drug kingpin here in the United States and then had a total change in his life. We'll explain exactly what that was all about. But first, let's check in with the weather, the sports, and the traffic. Here's Kim Gordon. Rokan Show right here. We're talking to George Valdez, who is the author of Narco Mindset. And he was one of the biggest drug dealers in the United States of America in the 1970s into the 1980s. And cocaine dealers. Cocaine, you were a kingpin. You weren't the dealer. You weren't on the street doing this, George. You were a guy that actually was distributing, you know, bringing it in from the Medellin Colombian cartel and setting up shops, you know, throughout the United States. Now, in your book, you describe, and I'm, by the way, you can meet George Valdez here in Chicago. Let me get this in for people who wanted to see this. You're going to be giving a keynote address at Dominican University on Saturday, March 7th. It's coming up this Saturday at 3:30 in the afternoon. A Man Among Men, Chicago.com is the event that you're, that's the website for the event that you're doing. And it is the A Man Among Men conference at Dominican University, which is on Division Street in River Forest. So let's talk about, so at your height, how much money were you making, would you say?
You know, even from the beginning, in 1977, when I took over and we expanded our operations and we're doing, you know, 800 to 1,000 kilos a month, I was making between $1 million and $3 million a month. We were doing between $50 to $100 million a month, which in today's money, I don't know, is $1 billion. But it was an enormous amount of money, especially when I had left the Federal Reserve Bank and I thought I had a high salary making $350 an hour.
So what? Because you're a kid. You're a Cuban extraction, right? Cuban immigrant growing up in Miami, and you went to school. You ended up finding your way into these guys somehow, and then next thing you know, you're making this $1 million a month. What were you doing with that money?
You know, and the thing about it, Ro, is like when we cross lines, we don't think that. When I first crossed that first line, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to open a foreign bank account, and then. Okay, I'm going to handle operation. I'm going to do this for a month or two. You never think how things will escalate. And, you know, it got to a point was I started looking at my life, and, like, I had, you know, $1 million worth of car. I had jets, yachts. I would buy a mansion everywhere that I visited frequently. I dated the most gorgeous woman in America, and I was miserable. And I look back now, writing Narco Mindset and Coming Clean, in retrospect, I realized, you know, I was in search of this American dream, this pseudo-American dream that society sells us that, hey, when you have a lot of money, if you have a lot of women, and if you have a lot of cars and all this luxury, you're going to be happy. Well, I had a ton of it, and I was miserable, and I couldn't understand why now that I reached the American dream, I was so miserable. And that's a message that I bring to a lot of fathers, and I bring to, in a lot of places that I speak at, is listen, the most important things in life, the wealthiest person, really not the one that has the most, but actually the one that needs the least. And, you know, we need to find satisfaction in everything but what society gives us. So we abandon our families, abandon our children, broken homes, all with the cheap excuse. Oh, look, I'm giving you what I never had. I'm giving you a vacation home. I'm giving you a fancy car. You know what? I've come to realize that our kids, all they want is our time. And we just don't seem to be able to go there. And then, you know, the old saying, Americans we're amazing at sacrificing our health to make our wealth. Then we spend every bit of that wealth to get the health back.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. All right, so what was the moment, what was the breakthrough moment here? You did eventually get caught by the government, right?
Well, the first time that I got arrested was I crashed over the jungles of Panama. I wasn't happy with making $1 million a month. So I worked out a deal with the government of Bolivia against my godfather who said, hey, listen, those people are animal. But I worked out a deal where I was going to be able to bring in 3 loads a month, and we were going to make about $7 million a month. And, you know, Ro, the thing, the money, looking back, the money was nothing because I remember my maid saying, can I clean behind the sofa? And I moved the sofa, and there's a bag with $700,000. I didn't even know how long it had been there. But I made this deal, and I got on an airplane, which I had never done. We crashed over the jungles of Panama. I was tortured by Noriega for 30 days to a point where every time I went to a bathroom, I passed blood. I got sent to the United States, and I was charged with heading the largest drug conspiracy in the history of America, given the highest bond ever, $7 million. I was just 23 years. I just turned 23 the month before. And I went to prison, and, you know, people say prison changed you. No, it didn't change me. I went to prison, and I came out, and I was just as powerful as before. In prison, I lived the life that I lived outside, except I didn't spend as much money. And then eventually...
I want you to explain that a little bit first. How long were you in prison for?
So the first time I was in prison for 5 years, which is the most they could give me on a conspiracy charge.
Okay.
And
you said you were living the life you were living outside. I mean, were there drugs? Were there women? What was going on?
Yeah, see, I never did any drugs. But yes, in prison, it's a microcosm of what you find anywhere in the world. I had a girlfriend in prison that worked there. And, I mean, I had sex every day. So to me, life was, and I was young and crazy and wild. But when I got out, I noticed that the world had changed. It wasn't, we were businessmen. We were not violent. We didn't carry guns. We wore a suit. We all had company. When I got out, I realized Pablo Escobar came into scene because I got out in 85. And then the world had drastically changed. But I went back because I had this hunger to get my power back. And I did. But then within 2 years, two components. Number one, I had a mother that when she found out, and this is a really, really important message for your listeners. I had a mother that when she found out I was a drug dealer, she came up to me and she was devastated. And she didn't stop telling me, son, what you do doesn't please God. You have destroyed us. We left everything in Cuba to give you an opportunity, to give you a life, and you just threw it away as a criminal. But then immediately, Rose, she would say, what do you want for dinner tonight? So my mother was tough love, but I define it by tough on me, but love me. So when the day I realized that I had it, I couldn't deal with this anymore. It was through an experience I detailed in Coming Clean about my little daughter knocking, and I'm partying in my 15,000 square foot mansion with this Hollywood celebrity, and getting this feeling of filth and agony, and I'm like, I can't take this anymore. And I decided to walk away. And at that time, imagine my desperation was so big that walking away meant I was convinced I was going to die within a month or two, because we really did not have a very good retirement program in the cartel.
Yes, no, you do not have. That's right. That the best benefits. All right, we got about 2 minutes left. So I want to get to this. So you went to prison again. You came out, and you ended up at Wheaton College. How long was your second bid in prison?
The second bid in prison was almost 5 years again.
Okay.
And in prison, I had a conversion right before prison. I decided I wanted to know everything about God. I went to Wheaton College, met my amazing wife, the greatest university on earth. I just wanted to be the best theologian in the world. And then I went to Loyola and got a PhD in Bible, became one of five Hispanics in America with a PhD in Bible and ethics. And then I realized I can't put six kids through college with a professor's salary. So I started a little company in the basement of my house, built it into a multi-million dollar company, and retired at 55. And now I dedicate my life to try to make this a better world for our kids, and to try to get people to stand up and make a difference and not settle for the lies that we are constantly told, and to put what is really important. You know, we're fighting for the soul of our children, and that's the battle. I got five grandchildren. All my children, God's grace, they're all very successful now, but I nearly lost one to an overdose. And so we just can't give up, and we got to fight. And it's my legacy. I'm going to go down fighting and going to make a difference. You know, they say that if you're crazy enough to think you can change the world, you will. So that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to come to Chicago to give that message to men and say, listen, men need to be men. We got to quit being nothing, and we got to stand up for what's right, stand up for our family, for values, stand up for our children, and stand up for our country and make this a better place. We just don't have to settle and be complacent and let the world go to hell.
All right. George Valdez is going to be giving the keynote speech at a Man Among Men conference, Dominican University. It's on Saturday, 3:30 p.m., amanamongmenchicago.com/speakers if you want to attend that. George, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Bro,
amazing story.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful being with you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. Narco Mindset is his book. The life principles that a cocaine drug lord learned on his journey to find meaning in his life. Well, that says everything you need to know right there. Chicago Blackhawks hockey is coming your way on WGN in 2 minutes.